Welcome to Moonbeaming, a podcast about creativity, magic, tarot, lunar living, and more. I'm your host, Sarah Faith Gottesdiener, and I am so happy you are here today. Hello, 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 hello. Hello, hello, hello. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Moonbeaming. I'm really delighted to be back with you here, and I both can and cannot believe that we are in December. We are in the last month of this year. What is time anyway? I just wanted to let you know, if you are whatever you are, exhausted, hopeful, not feeling at your freshest, starting to feel like your freshest again, whatever it is, wherever you are completely okay. And I'll continue saying this here because it warrants saying, if you can, please, please, stay home. Please do not gather with folks indoors, maskless. If people continue to gather, the end of this year and the beginning of the next one is going to be filled with more illness and more death that could be avoided. I'm saying this to you because I don't think actually my listeners are really like going out and partying indoors with a bunch of people they don't know. But maybe you do know someone or someones who are, and maybe you could say something to them. I think caring for other folks is spiritual, truly. So I just wanted to put that out there before I get into the episode. Before I dive right in, I want to make a couple of announcements. There is a lot going on in my little world this month, my little staying indoors quarantine world this month, because as you've heard, as I've spoken about on this podcast, my book comes out this month, my book that I spent years of my life writing and editing and thinking about. It's finally out. It's finally here, December 15th. And to celebrate that, I'm teaching, I'm showing up a bunch this month so I can connect with all of you and also celebrate my work and also launch it into the world in true Sagittarius, jovial, celebratory fashion. So I'll link all of these in the show notes, but just to highlight for you, I'm teaching my Lunar Hue Manifestation class on December 6th. This is a bit of a Cliff's Notes or crash course in my philosophy of what I guess the kids these days are calling manifestation, but make it lunar manifestation, but make it an actual process that works. LOL, JOK, I'm just kidding. But not really. And also, yes, I am. But that's what's coming up later this week. And I think it's going to be really fun. You can sign up through the links. Then I'm teaching a class on honoring the dark moon. And that's going to be hosted by House Witch, my lovely friends in Salem, Massachusetts. I love all of the witches of House Witch and all of the witches of Salem. I can't wait for this one. The dark moon is this significant lunar phase. It's this significant archetype. We're going to talk about deities. We're going to talk about energies. It's the lunar phase I happen to be born under, so I have a bit of an intimate relationship with it, and I love discussing its energies and the different ways we can work with it. So that's going to be really cool. I've literally never taught this class before. It's super fresh. It's super new. I'm super excited. And I'm doing a few free events open to all to celebrate the moon book this month. On December 10th, I'm doing a live chat and a Q&A with Lou Sagar, hosted by The Alchemist Kitchen. a shop in New York City. On December 14th at Skylight Books, I am doing a live online free event. It is like the official celebration of the book, and it will be moderated by friend of the podcast, Pam Grossman. So I'll link all of that. I know it's quite a bit, but I just wanted to share it because chances are, if you don't mind listening to me talk, you won't mind listening to me talk. So there you go. But really, I'm excited. I haven't been this active, I guess, all year. I'm an introvert, and it's funny, like, I don't love doing things on screens. So when the lockdown began, I actually didn't really go into the online route that much. I just sort of went a little bit hermity, but I'm coming out of my little hermit shell to be here with all of you, and I hope that you will show up and hang out with me. Please come say hi. Yeah. Okay, my babes, I didn't want 2020 to go by without talking about the fours in the minor arcana. The fours are connected to the Emperor, which I've spoken about quite a bit so far in this podcast. I think we can all be supported and helped by these cards as much, or if not more, than we can by leaning into or co-regulating or collaborating with the Emperor archetype or the Death archetype, who is Emperor's teacher card. Like, for example, I know folks who really, really do not resonate with the Emperor. So you can look to the fours to, or maybe like the four you most resonate with, to co-regulate with, to meditate on, to sink into the wisdom of, to let it support you. And that might be an easier way to step into the energy of the Emperor. And I'm saying it publicly. A lot of my students already know this. I'm sure I've said this in other places. I love the minors for so, so, so many reasons. I teach a class just about them called Elemental Intuition. Well, it's about the minors and the elements and our intuition. You know, just had to cram all the things into one class, but it's a super fun class. I love teaching it. I find them really fascinating because I think that they are both practical and magical. While major arcana energy often functions in this sweeping, intense way and will often move and flow through our lives in mysterious ways in various levels, kind of like whether we like it or not, the minors in general can feel, in my opinion, more relatable and more intimate. Like, if the majors are spirit and massive themes of our evolution and where we are in our life, then the minors can be how we interact with spirit or how spirit shows up in a way where we can hold hands with our evolution or hold hands with where we are at right now on the stage of our life, our life's path. They also are a really accurate reflection of a lot of the human experience. In general, we've all had a Five of Swords moment when maybe someone's taken advantage of us, or we're going through a really brutal breakup, or an Eight of Pentacles time period where we're working really hard and we're very focused and we're learning new things, or like a Two of Cups healing journey, maybe with another person or in therapy or in coming home to the self, seeing ourselves reflected in a way that is compassionate and loving. You know, a lot of folks can really easily relate to and tap into minor arcana energy. And that, of course, is partially because of the illustrations of Pamela Coleman Smith in one of the most popular tarot decks ever made, the Rider-Waite tarot deck. you know, I think it's partially because of that. And a lot of decks that have been created after that have taken illustrating the numbers. You know, we have the Marseille style decks, which are beautiful and I love them. That would be like the Thoth deck and the Marseille deck and a whole bunch of other decks that are out there. And those take the miners in a more meditative, more symbolic, more abstract visual direction. So there's a bit more of looseness and also fixedness in a way. I won't get into it, but that's my personal experience with a Marseille style deck and a Rider-Waite style deck where they call like the pip cards being illustrated and shown images and shown narratives really brings some of the energy of the numbers and the elements to life. So I just wanted to shout that out there. The other thing is there's just a ton of a lot more of them, right? They outnumber the major arcana a little over 2-1. And if you're a professional reader, you had better get just as comfortable with them as you are with the majors. Yeah. I also love the origins of them. Everyone knows I am a tarot nerd, so I love all of the backstory. I love all of the history. The miners stem from playing cards, from what folks used in games. They correlate with the suits. So hearts are cups, spades are pentacles, clubs are wands, diamonds are swords. Some historians that I have read also say that these suits can sometimes correlate with particular jobs that folks had. Like, so for example, hearts were religious roles or court-appointed artists and muses. Spades are farmers and the like blacksmiths or bakers or shoemakers and so on and so forth. I'm digressing here, but as I've said, I'm a total nerd. I think it's really interesting. So we have like the suits, like the thing you put on, the role you work with and utilize and embody for a moment in time. Other things I love about this idea around the miners and playing cards is this playing card origin reflects back to me how magical the mundane can really be. We can receive messages about our life's path from some pieces of paper. Like, that's sort of wild, right? Like, what's going on there? I love how this is an example of how magic is hidden in plain sight. You know, like you can totally read tarot with a deck of playing cards. And that feels very magic of the miners to me. Maybe that'll be my show title and book title, The Magic of the Miners. You know, but it feels very magic of the miners to me that our entire world can be this metaphor. There can be symbols hidden everywhere. Answers are unfolding in our lives. Messages are flowing through to us in different kinds of ways, in different kinds of objects, in different kinds of symbology. So I think that's really cool and interesting. And this other playing cards aspect slash origin story I really like is that often historically, playing cards were used for gambling. And gambling was often one of the few ways that folks could make money outside of government or state mandated ways of making money. You wouldn't have to pay taxes. It was done in secret, you know, it was hidden away. It was on the edges or the margins. You know, partially why gambling was illegal was because the state or the government, the church, you know, all of the above wanted to control how money was made and who was making money. Yeah. So with gambling, there's this other way to generate income, to gather in secret, to be entertained outside of capitalism, outside of the state. And the other thing is like thinking about games. Games are play, you know, sometimes, not always, but often. And play is this site of exploration that unleashes the imagination and is often associated with just pleasure, just, you know, just pleasure for the sake of pleasure, having fun, you know? So I love that connection there as well. Other reasons why I love the Miners, I mean, this is like me totally being a fangirl on the Miners. There are four different suits that traditionally correspond to the four different elements. Witchcraft. Who doesn't love a little bit of witchcraft sprinkled in with your tarot, yeah? Of course, Majors also traditionally will correlate with an element and a sign, a planet, yeah? The Miners, though, give us this deep dive into the elements. You have 10 Miners and 4 court cards that explore this element, and you can get really layered and really complex and go really deep, you know? And also, if you want to get even like more granular, there are traditions that assign planetary aspects to each card. So, for example, the 9 of Pentacles is Venus in Virgo. Each minor suit also can show us how to get in alignment. So, for example, say we have a preponderance of cups showing up, we might need to look at our emotional world, our relationships, our subconscious, what's going on with our intuition, as well as how our creative and spiritual life is going. They also could show us qualities we need to take on if we wish to grow and change, what we might need to go with, like for example, with the cups, like maybe we need to flow more. Maybe we need to compromise. Maybe we need to receive. Maybe we need to dream or vision. Going back to that suit, like that role we embody for a minute to help call us into alignment. So I really like think of the Miners as showing us the how, the practical steps we can take in our lives to address a specific issue or question. They show us what areas to focus on, what areas to interrogate. They can present like what we need to do and who we need to do it with. Similar, of course, to the Majors, they also express a particular stage of our evolution we are in, what our soul is craving right now, what we most need right now. The fours suggest the qualities needed to foster in our everyday world, in our everyday practices and efforts, and the elements that can help us with that. Each of the Miners, I think a lot of y'all know this, also correlates to a Major. So we have the Magician being the Ace. We have the Wheel of Fortune is number 10, so the 10s. That can help to parse out the more sweeping energies of the Major into more digestible bites. So the fours relate to the Emperor and speak to the resources, qualities, and processes that might be needed to develop to enhance our positive Emperor qualities, being able to build our access to our own personal power and personal empowerment, the ability to possess accountability and personal responsibility for what we are doing and how we are showing up. They illustrate the qualities that allow us to exist securely with our identity and with who we truly are outside of any external shoulds or external projections. They also speak to, I believe, our ability to reprogram ourselves so that our outside actions match our internal desires or our internal embodiment matches our outside behaviors and actions, which can all help us to expand and grow in a way that is healing, in a way that really reflects who we are in the world, who we are in our own lives. These are all Emperor themes. So going off of that, the Four of Pentacles, the Four of Swords, the Four of Cups, the Four of Wands, in all various ways, offer ways of being, ways of seeing, ways of reprogramming, ways of providing support and structure to who we are and what we need. And I'm going to talk a bit more about each of the cards in this episode and in a following episode. I also have been thinking a lot about this idea of co-regulation with not just other people, but the elements, co-regulating with the fours in general are really great. Like, they're way easier to co-regulate with than, say, the fives or the sevens, you know, cards, archetypes that are generally more illustrative of tension or of some sort of imbalance, right? That's harder to try to co-regulate with. But the fours, being this more secure energy, is really nice to co-regulate with. So, like, Four of Pentacles, relax into your body. Sink into the subtleties of your own energy. Try to define what enough means to you, like with your energy, your time, your money, your space, your material possessions, your self-worth, that which is sensual and tactile. Co-regulate with the Four of Swords. Practice tabletop breathing. Explore what prayer means to you. Listen to what or who comes through when you gracefully open up to receive, right? So thinking about that. We can also see with the fours where our emperor kind of growth, our emperor kind of embodiment might be hindered, where we might resist growth, where we could be afraid to grow into ourselves or switch up our expressions of identity. And I'm not trying to call anyone out. We all do it, myself included. Self-sabotage. We all sell ourselves short. We'll all react emotionally from an issue from 10 years ago. We all do this to protect ourselves. So the fours can also be about this. Protection, security, support, needing it, letting it in, building it. You know, with this four is this number of security. And so we have this like not awesome aspect of this energy, which can be stagnancy or defensiveness. I was just reading this amazing poem by Joe Harjo. It's called Conflict Resolution for Holy Beings, and it's in a collection of the same name. And number four in the poem was reduce defensiveness and break the defensiveness chain. And that's a whole world and word on the shadow of some of these cards. And of course, doi, like humanity in general. But, you know, thinking about all of the cards are this 360 degree spectrum around one theme, you know, so some of it isn't cute. It's not going to be cute. You know, some of it's going to be harder than others. And that's an aspect of the harder. So some other shadows of the fours are resistance to change and taking risks. Then, you know, that leads into atrophy or separation, resistance to signs flowing in that ask us to shift in some way. Sometimes I call the fours, I was looking for a job, then I found a job. Like, remember when you wanted what you had now so bad? Like, the steady paycheck was all you wanted, but now it feels boring and stifling, and you're like, don't know how to leave, right? The fours can show us where we are outgrowing ourselves or a process or a relationship. And it really depends, of course, on where you are in your own life and what you need when a four shows up for you. So, like, for one person, if a four shows up for you and you are craving stability and you just need some kind of something you can rely on, some level of consistency, some thing, some process, some person that you can trust, that four is going to offer you support. If you get a four and you're like hashtag over it in some arena, it could mirror or amplify feelings of stagnation or apathy that you're already having around the thing, you know? And so it could sort of offer you a nudge and also some ways to move through making your next moves around something you're really ready to leave. Last but not least, I wanted to share an insight I received when I was meditating on the fours for this episode. I got shown a cube, of course, right? That's a four. It's the cube. I saw this cube above ground and below ground at the same time, like a holograph. I saw it being the symbol of the basement and the structure above, the foundation and whatever is growing or whatever is on, supported or planted on that basement, on that foundation. There are these parts of structures that are very evident to us and can be interacted with. And there are parts that we can't see, like root systems and the tree's trunk and the branches, you know? We don't often see what is underneath the structure, the qualities that are creating that safety, that support. But that doesn't mean they're not there. A meditation practice, for example, is quiet and often underwhelming to behold. Maybe you never make your meditation practice public at all, but the meditation practice might be one of the strongest crossbeams of the structure that is holding my life together. So with the fours, there is this idea of as above, so below. There's this idea of balance or of the work and processes it takes to get to this security and structure as much as looking at that structure itself. Then there's what we're doing with the structure. If it's a table, what's the table for? What's the purpose of the platform we've created? Can we use what we've learned in other ways? Can we mix it up? Can we use certain tools that we've experienced in different ways, like the magician and her tools? The fours assure you that you do have what you need to feel secure, and you do have what you need to expand and grow. And remember, even if you don't feel that, the way that I teach or what I believe is evidence that you want it or desire it or need it proves that it is available to you because you are already activated with that longing or desire or need. It already exists. Maybe it exists below ground, invisible, where no one else can see it, but it's there. So you can go after it and you can try to hold hands with it and sink into it. So I'm talking a little bit about a couple of fours this episode. The first four I wanted to talk about is the Four of Cups. And that's basically because out of all the fours, this is the card that for me personally was always a little bit shaky to sort of get into. Because a lot of the traditional meanings of the card are like boredom, apathy. And it's like, well, okay, all right, sure. Like, but there's not really, it's like, tell me something I don't know. If you're bored or apathetic and you get the Four of Cups, you're like, thanks. Thank you very much. Like, what do I do with this? You know? Because it can be a hard one. It can feel ambivalent. It can feel mysterious. When looking at that Rider-Waite-Coleman-Smith deck, which is this deck I'm going to be referring to. It's the deck I used to teach with. It isn't, I don't read with it anymore, but it is the deck I teach with. It is a deck that has influenced so many other decks. And it is a deck that really clearly illustrates a particular structure, the particular structure of the tarot, which is what I use, which is what I encourage everyone use. I think we all need to have a structure, and then we can grow and integrate our own takes, our own interpretations from our own lives. But without that structure to, well, speaking of fours, of course I'm talking about structure. I'm like, why are you talking about structure, Sarah? Of course I'm talking about structure. I'm talking about the fours. So without that kind of structure, things can get really loosey-goosey and it can be difficult to parse out meaning. So yeah, I'm digressing like a blessing. Okay, when looking at the Rider-Waite-Coleman-Smith deck, there's this figure under a tree. It looks kind of resistant. Their arms are crossed. There's three cups in front of it. Another cup is coming out, kind of looks like the Ace of Cups. There's this hand coming out of the ether that they don't appear to see. You know, I'm like, well, depending on my mood, that figure either looks resistant and kind of annoyed or kind of chill, like just sort of chilling under a tree, like meditating, you know, hanging out. So it is visually a bit of an ambivalent card, which I also think is the beauty of Pamela Coleman-Smith's renditions, because you can read a lot into them. The traditional meaning of this card is focusing on the wrong things for emotional fulfillment, maybe even rejecting them, like love or a healthy relationship or a healthy relationship to self. Sometimes the card can show up when it's time to move on, but there's still some meaning you've got to make or some kind of closure you still need to find. Like you're not quite ready to go. You're not quite ready to leave that job. You know, maybe it's because you don't quite know what's next, or you don't even really know what you want anymore, which is where sort of apathy, I believe, comes in. Other traditional meanings of the card is like withdrawing in some way, going within, or some kind of relationship that you have maybe is like you don't really see exactly all of what's happening. Maybe the person is withdrawing, or maybe the situation, there's some part that is not transparent to you, so you don't really have all of the information in a way. So those are some other meanings. But I want to step back from the traditional readings, and I want to think about the element water in the number four. So thinking about water being contained in a structure, like a moat. A moat could be about boundaries. It could be about emotional boundaries. But one of the properties of water is that it wishes to flow. Stagnant water causes illness. Water wants to move and flow. We see that in water cycles everywhere. We see that when we're thinking about fresh water, the ocean. So there might be some kind of confinement or stagnancy of some sort with regards to all of the themes that have to do with the suit of cups, spirituality, creativity, inner child work, healing work, relationships, intuition, levels and layers of our conscious self, relationships and relating, and all things water. There's also harmony with water. There's beauty. There's art. There's the muse, inspiration. And art, I believe, that really flows from the heart. Altruism, being of service, compassion, care, all of these watery qualities. Receiving, again, I could be here all day. You can just fill in the blanks if I missed one of the themes that you equate the suit of the cups and water with. So there's this book that I think about when I look at this card by David Rico. It's called When the Past is the Present. And it's a good book. And also the title kind of says it all. When the Past is the Present. Yeah. So our emotions, just like our thoughts, just like our behaviors, they're habits they can be programmed and reprogrammed. Emotional responses that we have that we learned to keep us safe, even safe within ourselves, can be up for review now with the Four of Cups. I think about anger as being an indicator of grief or of resentment, as sometimes being an indicator of boundaries being crossed over and over again. So this card, the Four of Cups, can address this, how our emotions need to be reprogrammed and dived into in various ways. Like, what are our emotional patterns? What are we not taking care of? Are we letting our boundaries get crossed? And then we're like sitting in this stew of resentment where we're just getting more and more stagnant and it's taking up more and more space in our precious emotional body. We can take a look at what emotions or emotional responses make us feel safe and why, as well as how we were programmed to respond to particular emotional patterns that aren't helpful to us anymore, which is interesting. I just thought of this now as I was talking, but thinking about this idea of the book called When the Past is the Present, and then thinking about one of the properties of water as being about ancestry and about what we inherited from our ancestors, and thinking about what we inherited emotionally. The other element in the minors that has to do with ancestry and lineage and legacy, of course, or the pentacles or the discs or the coins, but water as an element really does correlate to ancestry, because we think about bodily fluids and being in wombs. We think about us being amoebas at one point coming out of the water. The water was our first home. So we can think about what we've inherited emotionally that aren't helpful to us anymore. You know, like being attracted to chaos or abandonment because that's maybe what someone's childhood was like. This is sort of weird, but this ties into ancestry and water and patterns. I think about this idea of the evil eye. Historically, a lot of cultures, including my own, would like back in the day, I mean like back in the day, there was this belief that if something was beloved, you know, there would be, or precious, there would be more of an evil eye on them. So they would do things like undermine or berate what was beloved to them, because they thought in some way, if they were saying, oh, like my child is no good, my child, you know, my child is not cute or whatever, they thought it would keep them safe. Like this idea that abundance will attract enemies. So, you know, in terms of like ancestral inheritances, we can have this idea of maybe being distrustful of joy or golden opportunities, or we can have this idea of waiting for the other shoe to drop and to close ourselves off to joy because we're afraid of it. Maybe it was inherited. Maybe it's something we learned to keep ourselves safe, you know? So I think about that with this card. This other specific quality I personally have related to this card is really specific, and that is recovery. This idea, this process of recovery. And this is pertaining to a really specific stage of recovery. Whether it is workaholism, like what I'm personally in recovery from, or anything else, there's this part of the stage where you've like stopped doing the thing that used to hook you or give you control or pleasure or promised you contentment or self-worth or whatever it is. Yeah. You aren't relying on it in the same way. Maybe you aren't even doing it. Maybe you've stopped smoking or, you know, something like that. Maybe you aren't going on social media, whatever it is, you're not doing it. It's gone, at least for now, maybe forever. But you haven't really found other things, other practices to brighten up your days, bring you meaning or contentment in a healthier way, in a way that's closer to you, your identity, all of these emperor kind of essences, energies. So you're in this gray kind of space where you might still be processing certain emotions, grief or longing, or maybe you're confused. You know, maybe you're in this sort of state of like, I just don't know. And this relates back again to the emperor, because maybe you don't know who you are anymore, because you aren't, you know, the person who could work 12-hour days 5 times a week or whatever. Or it could be the stage of recovery where that habit or that relationship or that device doesn't bring you joy anymore. It doesn't give you control or satisfaction anymore. You haven't stopped doing it, but you know you need to. You maybe don't even believe that another way could be possible. It's this like awkward, not fun stage of a process that I think just about anyone can relate to. And sometimes that message there is just like, hey, babe, this is where you need to be right now. Like, there's no other way you're gonna move forward without being in this ambivalent zone, without being sort of neither here nor there, you know? It's not all Eeyore though. Like, I know I'm sort of like dragging this card. Other meanings of the card are developing a rich emotional life, connecting to the gifts of one's subconscious and intuition, and contemplating what emotional fulfillment looks like for you, right? That's the flip side sometimes of apathy. You're like, well, what actually makes me feel good or neutral or safe or like myself? Where are you keeping yourself from yourself? Where are you withholding emotional fulfillment, pleasure, joy? So when meditating with those questions, you can figure out other ways to feel, dream, and be. Now I'm going to talk about the Four of Swords. Breathe in. Breathe out. Radical rest. Recently, I was sharing in a class I taught that I had this realization that for a lot of this quarantine, I personally, in my entire life, I personally have never had more opportunities to rest or do nothing. You know, like I've been homebound and I have truly rested less. I thought maybe I was resting, like on the couch or watching a movie, but I really wasn't. I had a screen on with another screen on that I was scrolling on, you know. My attention was really scattered and is really scattered, if I'm being honest. Maybe you have some of the same experiences. So I'm really trying to actually rest, to embody rest. You know, I also like have these examples of like you're meditating or maybe you're stretching your body or you're doing yoga, and halfway through it, you realize your jaw is like tense and clenched. Or you realize that some part of you, you're laying down, you're clenching like your spine or your hips. You're not letting yourself fully sink or soften into the bed or the floor beneath you. So you take some deep breaths and soften and surrender your entire body, your entire mind, as best as you can. And that is one of the very traditional meanings of this card, rest. Retreating, withdrawing, detachment are others. I wanted to share a few that I've developed as a result of spending time with this archetype. In the traditional Rider-Waite-Coleman-Smith rendition, of the Four of Swords, we are introduced to the interior of some kind of church, some kind of holy place. We see a figure laying on what looks to be a coffin, an effigy, in prayer position. It's very quiet. There are swords that are not in use. There is a stained glass window that it appears that the figure is praying to, or at the very least, it appears there's some kind of relationship to the figure. I've read some interpretations that the figure is dead, or just simply like a sculpture, like just an effigy on top of a coffin. That's not my interpretation. I think it's actually a person. There is this word pax, P-A-X, or peace, that is etched into the stained glass rendition of what appears to be a Madonna and child, like it's in the Madonna's halo, or, you know, the mother figure or parental figure, whatever it is it appears to be. So we have this knight, we have someone who goes into battle for their job, quiet, not using their tool of choice, their weapon of choice, praying. And so we don't really know what exactly is happening. Is the knight going into battle and praying for their life? Or has the knight finished a battle and is giving thanks and also praying for mercy, which is what knights would do? After a battle, they would go to church and they would pray to be forgiven for the lives they had taken, the blood that had been shed. In this rendition, there's also this nod to the Five of Swords. It's like this sort of prelude to the Five of Swords. That figure who is praying, maybe they're about to go into the battle of the Five of Swords. So that gets me thinking about fights and battles, the ones you lose, how you win, what winning even is anyway. And also battles and fights you don't even want to be in. Maybe you don't want to be at war with yourself. Maybe you don't want to think cruel thoughts about yourself. Maybe you need to forgive yourself. Call a truce. Angelus Arian says that truce is peace in action. So going back to, you know, this interplay between the Four of Swords and the Five, maybe that figure in the Four of Swords praying is in the background of the Five of Swords walking away. It looks like they lost their sword. It looks like they lost the battle. But what if the smartest thing to do is to walk away, is to not be in the fight, or is to let someone else win? You know, thinking about peace, thinking about truce, thinking about forgiveness. Sometimes in my client readings, this card can come up around making peace with abuse or with situations that you were placed in not by choice. And gentle listener, we are in those kinds of situations all the time. And so what part of this card can help you with is to see that and to see how cutting yourself loose from attaching your identity to these situations can help grant you peace and deliver you back to yourself. Sometimes it's like, I see this card and I just want to say, it wasn't your fault, love. You know, it wasn't your fault you were bullied at school or treated differently at work or in your family or in any other situation. It's not about you. So internalizing it is completely understandable. Hello, hi. Like, I'm not saying I'm somehow not someone who doesn't internalize certain situations, but this card can help us remember who we really are and who we really want to be and what we maybe need to do in order to find inner peace truly. we can go into a space of refuge. We can go inside of our own cathedral, our own safe space, where we can receive the energy of spirit that affirms us just as we are. Other messages with this card is this, there's this message here, you know, going like moving from spirit of prayer. There's this message here of praying, of receiving help, of letting in, of opening the mind, seeing what wants to come through, of accessing different realms and the processes that we need to do to let in space, let in different perspectives, let in helpers and messages that will grant us the answer to some kind of question we have right now. There's also this message with the Four of Swords as being an affirmation that you can change your mind. The Lioness Oracle, which is a deck that I use in my client readings a lot of the time, has this great rendition of the card as being a figure looking at records. So like, what record are you going to put on in your mind? We know that we can change our thought patterns. We know that we can rewire our brain. It takes time, it takes effort, and it takes awareness, but it absolutely can be done. So this card can be around choosing your thoughts, changing your mindset in thoughts that can help to support you, to really intentionally create positive thoughts, loving thoughts, a particular pattern that is going to support you, a habit. You know, there's this like saying, what you say to yourself, you would not let your best friend say about themselves. Never, you know? So treat yourself like your own best friend and make your mind a loving place to be, or at the very least, a neutral place to be. Try it. Try it sometime. Let's all try it. Let's all try it this week. Let's all try it this week, next month, for the rest of our lives. Let's all try it together. Yeah. So there's also this thread of the truth. Like, what is the truth? What is clarity? Needing to access a clearer meaning through the practice of surrender, through the practice of mental rest, physical rest, summoning deeper and more expansive levels of consciousness, as well as looking into and beginning kinder patterns of relationship with the self. So those are some things to think about when this card turns up for you. And that's what I've got this episode. You know, it was really interesting for me to think about these cards in the context of 2020. In some ways, the fours are about getting back to basics, getting back to our core needs, desires, and an authentic path that is going to nourish our soul, which of course includes refining and focusing on our particular structures that we put into place, like the cube, like underneath the foundation and above the foundation, our mindset, our habits, our beliefs, what's going on with our interior worlds. And because so many of the traditional meanings of the fours are about retreat, rest, isolation, often in a way that will facilitate self-reflection, but also sometimes loneliness. So the fours are like asking us, who are we emotionally, spiritually, relationally, and what do we need to feel supported, feel seen, feel like we are expressing our true identity? And so many of us have had these questions and themes come up for us in various and unique ways. And also it's really highlighted, I think I've said this previously, so bear with me if my record is on repeat. But when we think about this for ourselves, you know, having a roof over our heads, having clean water, having enough food to eat, and so on and so forth, we really want to make sure, at least it highlights for me, how incredibly important these needs are for everyone. You know, going back to this idea of collective care that I talked about earlier with the emperor, you know, like what structures do we need to invest in ourselves and our lives first so that we're taken care of? How do we need to ask for help if we need to ask for help? And how do we receive that in a way that is truly restorative and that is, you know, truly creating structures of care, structures of aid, structures of support that everyone can benefit from? So maybe your magical homework for the week is to take out the fours in your favorite deck or in a deck you want to get to know more and spend time with them. Like, what are they showing you right now? What can they help you with? Which one of them reflects like where you are? Which one reflects like what you need, where you'd like to be, what you have more work to do around? Like, I definitely, after recording this, I'm like, okay, Four of Cups, I'm calling to spend some time with you, because I was like, all right, there's more stuff there underneath in my personal moat, you know? So spend some time with one or two and see what they want to tell you apart from anything I've suggested here or anything else that you read. My dears, my loves, my gentle listeners, thank you for being here with me. If you are enjoying this podcast, please 5-star it and review it. If you haven't already, please subscribe. I'll be back next week with a very special episode that I know all of you are going to love. Moonbeaming was brought to you by Modern Women. It is edited by Caitlin George Parker. It is hosted by myself, whoever I am. I don't know at this point after this Emperor year, but I do know that my working name, my working title of a name is Sarah Faith Gottesdiener. The music is by Will Owen and myself. And yeah, that's, I think, all the credits. Thank you. Until next time. Witch is brewing in the kitchen. Witch is dreaming in the dark. Witch is sad.